ACC Nation Podcast, Episode 75. The crew, Chris Bond in Tampa, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, Xavion in Washington. I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. Today we are going to be looking at college football bowl projections. 10 ACC teams plus Notre Dame projected in college football bowl. Well, we're going to find out whether or not that holds true after seeing some of the scores from this weekend. Also, we're going to be taking a look at the ACC's announced 2017-18 basketball schedule, talk a little bit about some of the matchups there, plus ESPN's Way Too Early and Gary Parrish's Way Too Early rankings of ACC teams. Some interesting stuff there. One particular team that is not included in that, well, we'll find that out here in just a few moments now, won't we? But first things first, let's talk about this, again, kind of a train wreck of an ACC football schedule, guys. I don't know what to think of a couple of these teams after seeing some of these scores. Now, we know that the Miami-Arkansas State game was canceled, and the Florida State-Louisiana-Monroe game was canceled, with good reason, to make sure that everybody is safe and not sorry. So those are off the schedule, off the plate, and we're not going to talk about those any further because it's history. The first game we're going to go to is the Wolfpack, because Chris is in a very good mood today. We're going to start with Chris today talking about his beloved, the NC State Wolfpack, and their performance against Marshall. The final score, 37-20. Chris, you want to reflect on this game a little?
Well, certainly Ryan Finley had the day there. We certainly don't want to. I got to give credit where it's due. The play everybody will remember from this one, though, was the flea flicker. I don't know if you guys saw that. You know, when they're down by 10 points after the half, you know, with Philly. Finley handed off to Gillespie, then he handed off to Jacoby Myers and pitched the ball back to Finley. Nobody remotely close to Samuels down the right sideline for that touchdown. And that put Wake ahead at 20-17. That's the play I remember from that game because that's where everything swung and went the Wolfpack's way. So that certainly was a win they definitely needed. They couldn't go 0-2 after the debacle of last weekend.
All right. Xavion, your impressions of NC State's performance against Marshall?
It was a great bounce-back win for NC State. Ryan Finley played a hell of a game and definitely led the way, but I want to give a special shout-out to Kelvin Harmon. I mean, he definitely helped Finley a great amount, 9 receptions, 121 yards, and a touchdown. And he made his life a lot easier in terms of just pitching the rock to everybody. So it was a great comeback win for NC State.
Okay, and we go over to Will.
Yeah, great offensive effort, questionable defensive efforts when you allow Marshall to go for 350 yards and one of their receivers to get 248 of them. Running defense was not very good. One of their running backs had a 53-yard run. They averaged about 4 yards a carry. That's not counting the sack that they had. But can I say a good bounce back win, but still some questionable defensive effort.
Okay, some things to work on defense specifically there. So let's go to the next game. And Xavion, I'm going to start with you here. This was a loss on the part of Syracuse. Now, this was a toss-up game in my mind, and partially because of Brent Stockstill, who is a heck of a quarterback. So the final score, Middle Tennessee 30, Syracuse 23. Your impressions of that game?
We saw a much different stance or Syracuse offense than we saw last week. They put up, I think, around over for 500 yards last week, and they were held in check a little bit more this week. Like you said, though, Brent Stockstill did put on a show, throwing for 269 yards, 3 touchdowns. But it was a down week, I think, for Stanford. Or I keep saying Stanford for Syracuse, and it just didn't come out that worked out in their favor at the end. It was a close game throughout, but they just kind of pulled out the win.
Will, your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, the coach's son had a pretty solid effort, 269 yards, 3 touchdowns. Did a lot to keep Syracuse at bay. I mean, It was an interesting game because it was at the end of the first quarter, the score was 3-2 Syracuse. And you're thinking, oh, wait, that's a baseball score. Oh, wait, Syracuse hasn't fielded a baseball team in 40 years.
And now we know why.
Yeah. On the Syracuse side, though, Dungy didn't have a great game. Only threw for 180 yards and did throw a pick. But we talked about him last week. Steve Ishmael, another high reception game at 14 in this week,
mm-hmm.
keeping doing a lot. He's probably going to have well over 100 receptions by the time this season's done.
Ishmael and we said this last week, probably would have been a standout as well if he hadn't been overshadowed to a degree. Great receiver and is really shining this year for Syracuse. Chris, your impressions of Syracuse and their loss to Middle Tennessee?
Well, we have some really good mobile quarterbacks in this league. Eric Dungy is not one of them. And when you look at a stat line where Eric Dungy was the leading rusher in the game, you don't even have to look at anything else. You knew there was a problem. You know, the Orange badly needed this game. They have one of the nation's toughest schedules, and they're going to be hard-pressed to make the postseason now, in spite of any projections. You know, Stephen Ishmael had a career high of 14 catches, 116 yards. Actually, safety Antoine Cordy, who missed the final 10 games of last season, is now expected to be out 5 more weeks with a hairline fracture in his leg, according to another report. So it's just going to get it worse for that defense, one of their top performers being out now for now half the season going forward. Yeah, this was a bitter, bitter loss, especially when you consider who the defensive coordinator for Middleton and Tennessee State was, and that was Scott Schaefer, the previous coach in the regime there. And he had been with the program for several years in Syracuse, so he wasn't certainly anything public about it. He only talked about his kids as well as he should have, because his defense played a very good game, slowing down and nearly stopping Syracuse offense. But you have to believe there's some satisfaction when he went back to his hotel last night.
I'm sure. One thing I will give credit here to the Syracuse head coach, Dino Babers, he had made a comment about Brent Stockstill, the quarterback for Middle Tennessee State University, being NFL quality. And that was going to be their challenge in this game. And he hit it right on the nail.
Well, he wasn't kidding. He's actually on several scouts' radars, so he's not making that up.
Yeah. That wasn't just I wouldn't expect Babers to throw that out there just for the heck of it. I think he recognized that there was a threat that they were going to have a hard time dealing with, and they did. So, Will, Indiana over Virginia, 34-17. Your thoughts on this game?
Dum dum dum.
I'll invite everyone who doesn't follow me on Twitter to follow me at Will's World MN for a little mini rant I went on yesterday evening after a couple of beers at my favorite spot and coming home and reading my Twitter feed. But I'll kind of summarize it here. Is defense is good. Defense is pretty good. I mean, they held Indiana to 197 yards passing after putting up a monstrous amount against Ohio State the week before. They were very confusing. It was a great scheme by the defense. They were very definitely up to the challenge. Jordan Mack, 16 tackles. He was really good. Micah Kaiser, you know, he actually got hurt briefly at one point and came back and had two sacks in the game. Where the problems lie are the offense. Kurt Bankert, 39 completions, just 259 yards. Olamide Zaccheaus, 12 catches, 72 yards. I like the concept that they're trying to dink and dunk their way out of the field, but it feels like you gotta set up stuff in the medium range, in the 10 to 15 yard range, and it doesn't feel like this offense is doing that. It's either short stuff or deep balls that Banker's throwing like 5 yards over the receiver's head. So I think this offense needs a lot of work. And I feel like if that passing game can get a little more vertical, the running game with Jordan Ellis and Daniel Hamm will be a lot better. They averaged 2.2 yards per carry yesterday against Indiana. That's not a great defense, to be honest.
Chris, your impressions of the Cavaliers and Indiana?
Well, with 66 attempts, so Benkert certainly did his best. You can't say he was it was a no show. You gotta wonder about what the thinking is on the offensive minds on the Virginia sideline. I tell you where it's at though, because this day and age, the 3 yards in a cloud of dust is way behind us. I remember those days, and Jim definitely remembers those days. the days of 80-yard 20-play drives are way behind us. You got to have that big play ability that stretches defenses out, and Benkert not connecting on those deep balls. And it's certainly, you want your quarterback to miss high, but 10 yards over the receiver's head, that's a bit much. I mean, until they start connecting on some of those 20-plus yard plays, your front sevens and front eights in some cases are just going to crowd that line and force Virginia to challenge them deep. And I don't blame him for not being afraid, because Benkert just doesn't show he can connect on the deep balls.
All right, Xavion, I guess the conclusion that we can all reach here is that Benkert isn't a deep ball passer.
No, I mean, he can throw the short pass well. I mean, 33 or 39, 66 shows that. But I want to talk about what Wills mentioned earlier, the defense. They played phenomenal. They had 8 tackles for a loss, 5 sacks. But if you're having to spend a lot of time on the field, you're just progressively throughout the game just going to get more tired and more tired, and that level of play is going to just decrease. So I really want to give a lot of credit to the UVA defense, because this game could have been much worse based off how the offense was playing.
And let me just add one other thing about this game. I know a lot of people are questioning Benkert right now, and I'll be perfectly honest, I don't think that this is nowhere near the time to bench him. Remember, you got true freshmen behind him. Mm-hmm. Do you really want to go to a true freshman this early in the season with still so much left to go? And there's still a lot of the season. He finally turns things around and starts hitting these deep balls. You got to give him a little more time to try to get that rapport of those receivers.
Yeah.
I'll go one further. Yeah. Actually, I was going to say, Will, with the depth behind him, he's really the one player. If they lost, Virginia would be in serious trouble. Serious trouble.
I'm going to agree with you guys. I think Benkert is just what you need right at this moment. Maybe he's not the deep ball guy. Every time I've ever seen him attempt a deep pass, it's sort of like it's up there, and I'm thinking, I'm down in Richmond. I'm an hour away from Charlottesville. I could probably drive up to Charlottesville, walk into the stadium, and intercept it. That's how much he just sort of floats his deep passes. He's not a deep ball guy, so they're using his strengths, and he's good at those short to intermediate passes, and running the offense. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Don't replace him. Let him play through the entire season. Let those young guys get used to the game, and they'll step up next year. And that's when those new recruits come in. That's when you're going to have a much more solid Cavalier team. And this isn't going to be the season just yet. It takes a while to rebuild a college football team, just like a pro team. It takes time, and people don't always have enough patience, I don't think. So,
yeah, and this is gonna be a few more years to rebuild this program from where it was. It's gonna take at least another 2 to 3 years, because remember, they're doing this with a lot of Mike London's kids who are running a little bit different, ran a little bit different scheme than this current regime. So it's gonna take another recruiting class or two to really get Broncos players in.
Yeah. It'll get there. And with a coach like Mendenhall, you know it's gonna get there.
He's also still trying to get familiar with the area. I mean, he was on the West Coast for most of his coaching life.
Yeah. So recruiting wise, he has to create a whole new plan, a whole new scheme, and get comfortable with it. It'll come. Be patient. Now this next game, Wake Forest and Boston College, I think I was the only person who sucked lemons on the picking here. I had a lot more faith in Boston College, especially in their offense, with a solid, stout defense. I thought they were going to give Wake Forest a game. Wake Forest has proven that they are more than probably that we thought. And so now we're going to find out from the guys what their thoughts are on the Wake Forest-Boston College game. We start out with Chris.
Well, Anthony Brown's three interceptions pretty much tells you where you're at right there. It actually, stat-wise, it wasn't. It was a pretty even game, roughly around 300 yards each team. But when you with even numbers like that, you can see where how the score pans out. With three turnovers, three picks, the inexperience under centers where this the whole story of this game was. Wofford, while he doesn't impress you with his big arm or running skills, but he's a good man at the wheel of the offense. Whereas Brown was forcing some throws there where he shouldn't have, throwing a pick, three picks, critical picks right there, that were the difference in the game.
Xavion, your thoughts on this game, this matchup between the Demon Deacons and the Eagles?
Yeah, Anthony Brown showed that he was a freshman quarterback, and his performance definitely brought light to that. He was outplayed by Wofford, but I'm starting to notice a trend with ACC quarterbacks and leading their teams in rushing yards. Wofford had 92 yards on 20 carries, and if this is the trend going into the season or for majority of the teams, we're going to start seeing a lot of injury to care for these quarterbacks because you can never have your quarterback being a leading rusher consistently. I can see a game or two here, but if it's something that's a recurring thing throughout the season, they're going to start running into real problems down the line.
Will, reflect a little bit.
Yes, the rivalry. Not much of one this time around. It was pretty much a one-sided affair. Like Xavion said, Anthony Brown played like a freshman, threw three interceptions and was replaced by Darius Wade, who did better, but kind of had the Vanker kind of line, seven completions, but just 44 yards. Wake's defense was really good. I've been saying that since the preseason. I thought their defense was going to be just as good as last year, if not better. And they were pretty stout in this game. I mentioned Greg Dortch last week. He had another strong game with six catches, 56 yards, and a touchdown. What I noticed in the post game is the Boston College faithful are already getting pretty tired of Steve Adazio and his excuses. And he's in the fifth year of his coaching tenure there, and he's using these young excuses and all these excuses that pretty much the fan base isn't buying right now. So if there's a Seattle region that's pretty warm right now, I would say his is there.
All right. So let's put Adazio on the warm seat here. And I think it's deserved just for the reason that you pointed out, and it's not really the fans that I would throw in there as the reason, but the fact that there just doesn't seem to be any progress. And he's been there long enough now that something should have changed. Now, I think he's a good coach. I really do. I really think he's a good coach. But sometimes things don't click, whether it's the challenge of, and we all know, there's a challenge recruiting at Boston College. It just is, all right?
There is, yeah.
And Wake Forest, too, you know? Neither one of them are huge schools, and they're very specific in their curriculum, and they attract a more narrow focus of student-athlete, okay? So there's a challenge, and we recognize that, and I think everybody does, and it gives you a little bit more patience. But, yeah, warm seat for Adazio, I'm right there. Let me ask Christian and Xavion, do you agree or disagree? Warm seat?
Absolutely. Short reasoning I would give is Adazio by trade is an offensive line coach, and Boston College traditionally has put out really good offensive linemen. The line play since he has taken over has progressively gotten worse. Has a coach, when you look at a coach of where he started from and you look at that part of the team, and you see that deteriorating over time, that's very disturbing to me. So I think it's warm, and it's probably going to get a bit warmer as we go along here.
Xavion?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, if college football nowadays, you have 2-3 years max, if you're lucky, to really get the program rolling in the direction that people want to see it in. If you're consistently not just dropping the ball in areas of strength, you're starting to show areas of weakness now, the seat's only going to get warmer as the season progresses.
Okay, so would I be correct in saying that Clawson's been there longer, or rather shorter period of time than Adazio?
I believe you're right. I think this is like this fourth year, yeah.
Okay, so he's had his time. Wake Forest is rebuilt. Where's Boston College?
Mm-hmm. I remember, I believe it was Wake's first year, they only had like 200 and some yards rushing as a team that year. No, it was like almost 500. That's what it was. They're averaging like 1 yard a carry basically that entire season.
Nice turnaround. Yep. Okay. Yep. All right. Let's go to our next game, Georgia Tech and Jacksonville State. And Jacksonville State is really a fairly decent team. Georgia Tech had a little bit of a problem with them there at the get-go, but turned things around in the second half. Xavion, let's dissect this game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a 10-7 game going at halftime, but in the third quarter, Georgia Tech exploded for 20 points to start stretching out this lead. It's that triple option will give you problems, and then once you throw in one of those crazy passes and stuff, that always seems to help make an explosive play, and that's what's going to lead Georgia Tech throughout the season. Marshall was 5 of 7 for 112 yards and 3 touchdowns, but if you're running the ball over 50 times almost, those handful of pass plays are likely going to be for big yards if you can execute them properly.
Will?
The stat that I looked at this week was Taquan Marshall's rushes. I think he ran the ball over 40 times against Tennessee. This week it was 13 times, but he only averaged 1.9 yards per carry. It was not good, but I'm glad that they limited his rushes more this week. And they still ran the ball 49 times, but they spread it around. Kervonte Benson had 11 carries. And all in all, didn't have a ton of success running the ball like they normally do. Jacksonville State's defense actually did a pretty good job in controlling that rushing attack. But I say after the second half was all Georgia Tech, they outscored them 27-3 and pretty well cruised on to that victory.
Chris?
Well, 10-7 at the half, you got the impression that Georgia Tech was playing with its food. But it was more accurately, I think it was Jacksonville State, as Will said, was playing it well defensively, but that's when the depth factor kicks in the third and the fourth quarter. When you're trying to defend an offense like that, the lethal part of that is it just wears you down. If you don't have the second or third team players that you can plug in there and spell throughout the game, your front line starters that you trust the most will just gonna get worn down. One guy I do want to call out there now, last week against Tennessee, you're waiting for somebody in the Georgia Tech defense to make a play, and which never happened. But I'll give a little shout out to the corner, Lawrence Austin. Even though he lost his helmet on the touchdown that they gave up in the second quarter, the next two possessions, Austin, I saw, broke up. There was a third down pass attempt. I saw him take off when he picked off the quarterback Horn for a 21-yard return on that point. Lawrence Austin certainly stood up in there and was certainly part of the effort to close out the deal.
What I liked about this game is that, and this is something you guys pointed out, Taquan Marshall, 5 for 7, 112 yards, 3 TDs passing. This just added a dimension to their offense that they have not really had much success with over the last couple of years. They kind of come and go, you know, and everybody is so focused on that run option that they get distracted. And if you have somebody who can throw the ball, and obviously this young man can with a great deal of accuracy, if you have him out on the field and you set up for a run option and everybody's looking at that, and then you strike to the opposite side, you're going to be deadly on offense. And I think that's going to come together. He's a young player. I mean, you know, just starting. So Get him a couple more seasons there and build up the things that you need to with the Yellow Jackets. They are on their way. Let's go to our next game. And, Will, it's the Duke-Northwestern game. Duke really really had a nice showing here. 41-17 final score.
Yeah, we're going to talk in a little bit about one of the best all-around offensive performances in quite some time here. But you know, we'll get to that in a little bit. But Daniel Jones himself had a really good game, 413 total yards, threw for 305 yards, ran for 108, did a lot for this Blue Devils team. And TJ Romming, 12 catches, 127 yards, another strong, you know, game for him. But as much as that offense, you know, was dominant, the defense was really good. They held Northwestern under 200 total yards and 22 yards rushing, 1 yard per carry. That was really impressed by a Duke's defense there. And I think this is a team I've been saying they're going to be better than a lot of people think. And they showed it yesterday.
That's that Cutcliffe surprise fly under the radar approach. Chris, Duke and Northwestern.
Boy, you hit nail on the head there, Will. Jones continuing to impress. And, you know, when he adds in his own 100 yards of rushing atop of 305 yards passing, this young man has really been under the radar for some people, but not us, of course. We've seen it coming. Because we got our finger on the pulse. That's right. Last week when they held North Carolina Central to 7 points and 158 yards, everybody was like, yeah, you know, that's the FCS school. That's fine. It really didn't show us something. But Northwestern typically is a prolific scoring offense. Pat Fitzgerald runs an offense that will challenge you. And holding him to 191 total yards in that game, that's impressive. It is impressive. And Duke is a team now you really have to really keep an eye on. And other ACC coaches are going to have to circle that date in the calendar, because this isn't last year's team where you could just overwhelm them with the depth, because Cutcliffe just didn't have enough experience to get in there and stay in the games. He does this year. He does here, and Daniel Jones, he's doing a magnificent job. Another great quarterback by Cutcliffe. And this is going to be a fun team to watch going forward.
So, Xavion, from what Chris just said, this isn't your father's Duke.
They had a phenomenal game. Daniel Jones had over 400 yards offense, and they had a total of 500 team yards on offense as a team. So, single-handedly, you know, he definitely led the way, but I want to bring attention to they had three fumbles in the game, and that is definitely cause of concern. I mean, they didn't lose two of them, but they did lose one of the fumbles. If you're unable, if you can put up as many yards as you want as a team overall, but if you're not able to keep the ball and continue to put up the numbers that you are, when you get into conference play and start playing tougher opponents, you will start, you know, seeing the bad end of the results of that, because teams will take advantage of that and put points up and keep the ball out of your offensive hand if the offense isn't holding on to the ball. But this was a great victory for Duke, and they're definitely moving up in my personal power polls, because I'm seeing a really, really good team.
Yeah, Duke definitely going to be making some moves. We'll see just how far up the power poll they go this week, which you will be able to catch at accnation.net. Because of the way that the week started, or the football season started for the ACC on Labor Day weekend, it kind of threw everything off. So the AP and everybody else is going to get back on track here and start having stuff out at the front end of the week now. So we'll be doing the same thing, emulating that. And so you'll be able to catch the picks and the power poll, and just about everything else will be coming out on Monday. Let's go to our next game, which the score may have been a little bit misleading. Or maybe not. We'll let Chris explain. 27-0, Virginia Tech over Delaware.
I'd say Virginia Tech's defense felt a bit stung by giving up so much from last week to West Virginia. Even though it was a win, there's a lot of pride on that side of the ball in Blacksburg, as we well know. And so the next opponent, regardless of who they were, was going to feel it. And I don't think any other young men care who the opponent was. leaving a goose egg on the board after last week certainly is something that they're very proud of.
Xavier, let's take a look at the Hokies and Delaware.
Virginia Tech definitely showed up on the defensive side of the ball. They held them to 170 yards rushing and only 116 yards passing. Complete polar opposite to the last week's show that West Virginia put up on them. So they definitely responded correctly. I do want to bring attention to their third down conversions. They only were 3 of 11. And going forward, you want to do a much better on that, especially against a team like Delaware. You want to be able to convert those drives and keep drives going. The score 27-0 is always great to shut out, but this could have been much more of a blowout had they converted on more of those third down conversions.
I would certainly agree with that. So we're going to go with our stat guy, Will, and talk a little bit about why the Hokies are not performing well on third down. Does it have something to do with their offensive scheming, the play calling during games that are putting them in these difficult situations that a freshman quarterback may not have enough experience dealing with?
When you're not getting a whole lot of contribution from the running game, you're kind of stuck in some of these third and longer situations where the probability of converting these third and longs are not as great. But they average 2.9 yards per carry against this Delaware defense. Jackson threw 222 yards, which is pretty solid, two touchdowns. They were sluggish off on offense, obviously, as has been said. They were stout defensively. Another all-name candidate for Delaware, running back Thomas Jefferson. Maybe that's why they were so motivated. Virginia Tech's defense was so motivated yesterday.
It's the founder. Get him.
I hear you. Okay. Here's the one thing I'm taking away from what you guys are telling me. I did not get to see this game. But it sounds to me like the offensive line is doing a fairly decent job of creating a nice pocket for Josh Jackson, but they're not too good at executing running blocks. Is that kind of the deal, or is it the actual runners that are not performing? Which one? Will, I'll go with you on that first.
I didn't get to see much of this game yesterday, but I wonder if it was. I wonder some of it was just a little bit of a letdown effect from such a emotional game last Sunday night, with the former Big East rival with so much, on the line there. Maybe they just had a big letdown game. Mm-hmm. I think another a game like their upcoming game would be more telling.
Okay. Chris or Xavion, either one of you have a thought on the offensive line maybe not doing as well on their running blocks?
Yeah, there was definitely a lack of rhythm there that, as Xavion was pointing out, you want to have these kinks worked out against the likes of Delaware. Definitely in the guard play, I was not, I felt like they were a little bit late on the snaps and the pull blocking. There was one that I specifically saw where I wish I could find a highlight on it. It's one of the funniest things you'll see in football when a guard doesn't know the snap count when he's on a pull play or a sweep, and he's the only guy that gets up and runs down the line, and he stops. It's one of the funniest things you'll ever see because he knows he just messed up. But also an indicator that there's definitely some timing and some kinks that need to be worked out, and certainly the offensive line coaching will address that through the week.
What do you think, Xavion?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. If you guys are only running the ball 28 times and only getting 81 yards, that's definitely a huge cause of concern with the offensive line and not doing their essential job. I mean, pass blocking is one thing, but when you think of offensive linemen, majority of times, football, when it comes to football regards, is putting lunch in the garbage bin and going to work and putting down getting those extra tough yards and whatnot. If they want to do well in the ACC and close out victories and keep the ball and keep possessions going, they're going to have to strap up their chin straps and get to work, because what we're seeing so far is not a good indication.
Let's stay with you, X-Man. Let's talk about this this game. Either tells me that one team is not nearly as good as they should be, or one is a lot better than we thought. And maybe both. Louisville, North Carolina. Final score, Cardinals over the Tar Heels, 47-35.
It was the Lamar Jackson show, is the best way to put it. Over 500 yards of offense again, 6 touchdowns. But defensively, they were just getting chewed up. Louisville is, they're going to basically be in every type of, every game is going to be this type of game where he's just going to be doing everything in the world to keep them in the game until he finally just runs out of gas, because this type of production, he had to run the ball 19 times, leading rusher on in attempts on the team again, and throwing the ball 39 times, and he's just that's not recipe for success in football. So it's going to be a long season for Louisville. They might continue to put up these numbers and put on a show, so to speak, but I think what happened at the end of the season is going to probably occur sooner rather than later.
A lot of talk last night on ESPN about Lamar Jackson should be a front runner for the Heisman based upon his performance in this game. I'm not 100% on board that wagon. I think that he earned it last year. I don't know. There's so many questions with Louisville that I have here, guys, that I'm not so sure that they deserve to be as highly ranked as they are, because I think they're getting ready to face a challenge that is really going to crush everybody's perception of this team. And I hate to say that, but your thoughts, Will?
Yeah, that soon will be this upcoming week when they play Clemson, and we can get to just how dominant Clemson was defensively here in a sec. But I thought it was, you know, Andre Smith had come out and said that they're going to stop everything Lamar Jackson does. 705 yards later.
Not so much.
If he meant to be holding him under 1,000, maybe that's what he said. Yeah.
And yeah, like Xavion said, 19 carries again. Still, you got to go less than that. Maybe the fact that Malik Williams had such a great running game that maybe they will be more inclined to give him more carries. For North Carolina, I hope Chaz Surratt is okay. He was awesome in the first half. Got injured right before halftime. Brandon Harris came out and played the second half. He played well, but I still think that Surratt should be the guy going forward. The running attacks was pretty rough yesterday. They only ran for 17 yards. Didn't even average a yard per carry. It was not a great rushing effort. But I think there's going to be. I think the future is pretty bright at quarterback and running back for North Carolina, so long as they're used properly.
All right, Chris, your final take here.
Wow. You know, just leaving some little bit of meat on the bones there again there, Will. But thank you so much. I'm going to touch on Andre Smith. Probably not a good idea to stoke the fires of one Heisman Trophy, defending Heisman Trophy winner. Not a wise move. There didn't seem to be a lot of preseason buzz about Jackson, as we have forementioned in the previous podcast, guys. But he does make it look effortless out there. Now, 19 carries, though, I got to be on board with Xavion and Will on this. This is not good. It's not like these were 19 escapes from a sack either. These were designed runs. And I got a question Petrino doing this, his play calling. I call him out on it. You want to save that stuff for when the Clemsons and the Florida States come along, when he's really going to need that and you want that extra ace to throw out there. But against North Carolina, you really didn't need it. So it's going to be interesting to see Lamar Jackson survive this upcoming schedule. I don't like the looks of how this is running. The offensive line, by the way, was not blocking very good at all. Jackson makes a lot of lines, would make a lot of bad lines look good. And quite frankly, that's what he's doing. No one's pointing that out, that they're missing their blocks. They're not even getting off the blocks at all. On the packet plays that there were, guys are just getting blown back off the line. There's a lot of problems with Louisville that are not being addressed. And Jackson's hiding most of them, but when you get into the higher tier, top five, top 10 opponents, those things will get exposed. And I'm right there with Jim. This isn't going to be pretty.
All right, well, let's say this. The NFL is looking closer and closer at Lamar Jackson, and it's not because of his running. In that game, 25 for 39, 393 yards, 3 TDs. Jalen Smith did a nice job for the Cardinals, too. 9 receptions, 183 yards, and picking up a TD. So the passing game is there, and you guys have got an extremely valid point here. It is absolutely insane that you take a talent like that and you throw him to the Wolves. It's going to end up bad. Xavion pointed this out. You keep running and running your quarterbacks, somebody's going to get hurt, and it's not going to be pretty. And I hope that does not happen, but it just feels like it's about to. Let's go to this next game. Will, I believe you're up next. Penn State at number 4, cross-state rivalry with Pitt. The final score, 33-14.
The thing that kept this close was Penn State's quarterback, Trace McSorley, didn't have a great game. Threw for 164 yards and an interception. Yes, he threw three touchdowns, but he barely completed over 50% of his passes. The running game is really what won it for them. I am tongue-tied. Averaging 6 yards per carry. There you say Saquon Barkley, you know, he's going to be someone that is going to be in the Heisman race. He only carried the ball 14 times, but they only ran 52 plays. A lot of that is just because Pitt played ball control and held the ball for a long time. But Pitt just wasn't very good on offense. Max Brown was okay. The running attack was all right. But I guess the plus is Pitt covered the spread.
Okay. Chris, a look at the Panthers against the Nittany Lions.
Well, you know, Narduzzi after the game downplayed the idea of a quarterback controversy, but coaches are famous for denying the obvious. You know, Brown having, I'm reading the QBR rating of 8.8 on this. That certainly is not going to get it done in major college football. I feel bad for Pitt fans in the sense that the offensive output is just not going to be there with a new offense coordinator and new skill players. And the Brown experiment may be a very short-lived one here. He's just averaging just under 8 yards per completion, and he's not getting anything downfield. As a matter of fact, I would say Benkert that Virginia is a more deep ball threat at this point than Brown is by the tapes that I'm watching. So I can see opponents doing the same thing against Pitt as what they're doing against Virginia. They're going to put a lot of people in the box and make them beat them deep.
Xavion?
Yeah, there's definitely a quarterback controversy brewing up in Pittsburgh. I've seen plenty of Max Brown from his USC days, and a lot of issues that were going on there have definitely started carrying over. He completely just lacks any type of scramble ability inside the pocket. He was sacked 5 times, and he's just an inability to throw the ball, the deep ball, which coming out of high school was one of his strengths and whatnot. He was, you know, he was like amazing at throwing the deep ball, and now in college he's just unable to do that thing. So it's not looking good for Max Brown, and it's not looking good for the Pittsburgh offense. Definitely Saquon Barkley put on a show, running the ball and receiving the ball, but if Pittsburgh can't find an alternative to what's going on behind center, then they're going to be in for a long season.
I was wondering what your thoughts were. I know you're a Brown supporter because of his background, but that's a very interesting take on his history. That strikes me not so much as the individual, but maybe his coaching. And when you have somebody who is a long ball thrower in high school and then they go into college and that disappears, that tells me that they need some work, and the coaching staff needs to spend some extra time working with these guys to get in their head and to get the rhythm and let them get used to that speed up in the college game, the same way college kids have to get used to the speeding up of the game in the NFL, so that they're cool on their feet. And it doesn't sound to me like he's had the opportunity to do that. Now he's got some bad habits, and whether or not those can be broken overnight, by the coaching staff at Pitt is remains anybody's question. We'll see where that goes. I'd really like to see Pitt succeed with Brown, but if it's not the case, if he can't step up, if he can't adjust, even if the coaches are working with him, then you just have to move on. Let's go here. Let's see. I guess we're at Xavion, right? All right. So 14-6. Didn't do anything to impress me. Number 3 Clemson over number 13 Auburn.
Yeah, no, that I wasn't very much impressed by the Clemson offense, but the defense definitely showed out. 11 sacks, 14 tackles for a loss. That defensive line and linebacking corps put constant pressure on Auburn's quarterback. And if you were watching the game for the first half, this was honestly Auburn's game to lose. They had more than ample opportunity to put points on the board. I think it was their first drive. They chewed up 7, almost 8 minutes on the clock, and had back-to-back, you know, almost fourth down conversions in the red zone within the 5-10 yard line against Clemson. But that defensive line stayed stout and definitely put an end to that. So I give more credit to the Clemson defense than anything in this game, because the offense definitely didn't do much in terms of putting points on the board. Kelly Bryant again led the way with 19 carries. And again, if you want to see success and you want to have a good season going in November and December and whatnot, that can't continue to happen in any regards.
Okay, we've talked about this all all the time. This is going to be a defensive year for the ACC. So Will, dissect this game a little more for us.
It was a dominant defensive effort, and Clemson just got another sack. They were all over the quarterback's Jarrett Stidham. He ended up with minus 42 yards rushing. I mean, some of that was they obviously the college football, they count the sacks as rushing yards. Oh, and they just sacked him again. They did that 11 times, by the way. Clemson was just absolutely dominant. Austin Bryant had 4 by himself, and they just sacked him again. like Xavier said, offensively, it was a little rough. I mean, they didn't run the ball very well. But, you know, Auburn has a really good defense as well. This was a good defensive battle. If you're kind of a fan of the old school, you know, low scoring defensive battle, this was definitely the kind of game you were definitely interested in.
A defensive game, definitely good. And I will point out something here in just a minute after Chris gives us his take on the Clemson, the Tiger game.
Well, this is probably the best defensive line Auburn will face this year. And that includes their last game on the schedule. And I'm sure Mr. Stidham has seen enough of Mr. Wilkins and his friends from the defensive line. 11 total sacks. My take on this really is these offensive lines were actually very good, but the quality of what they were facing up front is these are great defensive lines, guys. There's a lot of NFL prospects on both sides of the defensive ball for both of these teams. I agree with Xavion. Auburn flushed away its opportunities to take control of this game and walk away with it early on. The game-winning points don't always come in the fourth quarter. Sometimes they're in the first and second quarter. And Auburn left them on the field at that time, because after that point, no matter what field position Auburn seemed to get, it was 3-and-out. And Stidham was just, you could just watch him. He was gun-shy. He had guys open deep. The starting strong safety for Clemson was out, and there were deep balls down the middle available if you watch the film. But he was so gun-shy that he didn't even bother looking at it. He's just looking for his check down automatically. That's how dominant performance that defensive line was for Clemson. That's the tail of the game right there. The Clemson offense definitely misfired a lot, and this was another game where Clemson just doesn't seem to have it back together. But let me throw this out to you guys, and if you might remember, the first few games of last season with a much more seasoned offense, they were sputtering too. This isn't a matter of inexperience here. They seem to work it out as the season goes on. We know they have talent. It's just a matter of getting on the same page. So Watkins and Smith and the crew that are now playing on Sundays worked it out. I have faith that these kids will as well.
Here's a takeaway that I have, and I'm sure it will upset a lot of people. I think Kelly Bryant is destined to be a better quarterback than Deshaun Watson. I see something in him that absolutely blows me away. There, I tell you what, I saw a couple of passes, and I'm thinking to myself, he has got a strong arm. Deshaun Watson did not have the strongest of arms and wasn't the most effective passer in the world. Kelly Bryant does and will be one heck of a passer. As the season progresses, next year especially, he is going to be fun to watch. I thought Ray McLeod had a decent a game as well. I think the offense is only going to get better. And Clemson will step up to the plate. And that was not an easy game. That was definitely a defensive battle. So, all right.
Yeah.
So, we're running down tight on time. So, let me give you some projections here on College Bowl appearances by ACC teams and Notre Dame as well. Are you ready for this? This is a preliminary. Quick Lane Bowl, Wake Forest and Iowa. That should be an interesting matchup. The Independence Bowl, Georgia Tech and Missouri. The New Era Pinstripe Bowl, Syracuse and Michigan State. Okay, maybe not.
Good luck.
Military Bowl. That's going to be Pitt and Navy. The Camping World Bowl, NC State and West Virginia. Oof.
Okay. That might be Virginia. The best tailgate.
Okay. Then the Belk Bowl, typically an ACC team, but because of the way that some of these early projections are working out, Notre Dame is taking the place. Notre Dame and Vanderbilt. The Hyundai Sun Bowl, Miami and USC. Okay.
That will be fun to watch.
USC will be in the college football playoff, so I don't think that's
going to. He's calling
the unbiased opinion.
Calling it here first. All right. The Tax Slayer Bowl, South Carolina, Virginia Tech. All right.
South Carolina will be the one getting slayed there.
Citrus Bowl, Georgia, Florida State. The Capital One Orange Bowl, Louisville and Ohio State. And the Rose Bowl, Clemson and Washington. And they have Clemson and Alabama back at it again in the national championship. So, that's of course, that's way too early projections.
Way too early.
Too early, yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit about basketball here real quickly as the seconds tick away. Gary Parrish, CBSSports.com. You need to check this guy out on a regular basis. If you don't have him on, you know, somebody that you're listening to his podcast or checking out his articles on a regular basis and you're a basketball fan, shame on you. Gary Parrish, P-A-R-R-I-S-H. Check him out. Here are the teams that he has projected from the ACC. Duke at number one, Louisville 6, Miami 11, UNC 12, Notre Dame 13. Don't see any Virginia in there. ESPN's way too early. Number one, Duke. Number 6, Louisville 11, Miami 13, UNC. And number 21, Notre Dame. There are some other folks who are projecting Virginia to be in the running, but we'll check them out later. You can get the entire schedule at accnation.net. We've got it set up there that you can download. All 135 regular season games are going to be available through one source or another, ESPN, ACC Network, the Network Extra, CBS Sports, or the Regional Sports Networks. Regular season play begins on Friday, November 10th, and a lot of those games will be available. One of them includes a Georgia Tech facing UCLA in Shanghai, China. I don't understand why. First conference,
don't drink the water.
The first conference game is Saturday, December 9th, Duke, Boston College. And Barclays Center in Brooklyn will be playing host to the New York Life ACC tournament for the second consecutive year. Lots of good stuff. Also got the Big Ten ACC Challenge coming up this season. Some nice matchups there, too. And a couple of scratch-your-headers. So check that out. We've got the full list of everything and something you can download. That's a lot of pages, 12 pages to download if you want to do that. ACCNation.net. Very quickly, final thoughts from Will.
Just want to send Chris best wishes and be safe with the impending hurricane coming.
All right. And Chris?
Well, I appreciate that, Will. Thank you very much. Right now, I'm looking out the window. The wind and the rain have picked up. We're expecting hurricane force winds around 11 o'clock midnight tonight. Sustained winds, which is around 75 to 85 miles an hour. Not as bad as what it could be. A typical Category 3 hurricane is around 115, 120. But we're in a high ground location and a solid concrete home. I am the only one in the house, actually, that has been through a hurricane. The other folks are from Ohio and California, respectively. And they're looking to me to be the veteran and say, hey, is everything okay? We're okay.
They're in trouble.
As I'm pouring another bottle of Jameson, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, and by the way,
yeah,
we recorded this just for time reference as people are listening through the week. We recorded this Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, just so that people have a reference of why we're talking about this hurricane and if you listen later in the week. So go ahead.
But real quickly, I want to get out a football thought on this. The disturbing trend, as Xavion touched on earlier in the podcast, that I really wanted to get out here. The disturbing trend right now of the quarterbacks, I don't know if it's a lack of running back quality at this time in the ACC, or it's play calling, if there's some trend that we need to put a pulse on. We'll work on this and talk about it as we go further in the season. But six games this weekend, the leading rusher was a quarterback. Six. Lamar Jackson isn't the only one. Eric Dungy was a leading rusher for Syracuse. Khalil Bryant was a leading rusher for Clemson. I could go on. Daniel Jones had over 100 yards for Duke. These quarterbacks are not going to last if this keeps up. And if it's a lack of running back depth, then your quarterback depth is going to pay for it as well. Certainly something we want to keep an eye on and hope these guys can last.
Xavion, final thoughts.
No, I'm about to talk about USC real quick and their amazing win last night against Stanford. So
booking your flights for El Paso, right?
yeah. great win last night. If you see my Twitter feed at Xavion, XAYVEON, you'll see the mayhem of me being a proverbial fan and going through the ups and downs of the game. But it was a fantastic game last night. Stayed up until midnight to catch it in full and just looking very, very excited for the season. I'm going to call it now, and we have the ability to go undefeated into the college football playoffs. So that's where I'm at right now.
Okay. Hey, we got to have that. We got to have that, that the oddball there that goes for the Pac-12 mixing it up with us. It keeps it interesting.
The left coast balancing it out. Yeah.
That's right. keeps it interesting, and we're glad you're on board, X-Man. My quick thought here is that to Chris and to your family, and to your friends and all of my family and friends who are in Florida and anything that is in the way of this mess, best of luck to you. And our thoughts are with you. We've, you know, got ways to stay in touch and, you know, being positive. We'll see you in the next episode. How about that?
So well, I want to take a real quick tip to my cap here, guys. Among the four of us, one of us has experience as a first responder. That's Jim, and we thank you for all you've done for people in need. That goes for all first responders that are out there right now, braving the elements, being away from their families so they can protect ours.
Yeah, good people. Good people.
Yes, you are. Yep.
I paid him well for that comment, folks. All right. For Chris Bond in Tampa, Will Ogenen in Minneapolis, Xavion in Washington, I'm Jim Quist in Richmond.
Skol.
Slanja.
Bye, Lord.